Sam unfolded the rather chewed, rather soggy book. "Where's my cow?" he announced, and young Sam chuckled. Rain rattled on the window. "Where's my cow? Is that my cow?" A thing that talks, he thought, as his mouth and eyes took over the task at hand. "I'm going to have to find out about that. Why'd it make dwarfs want to kill one another? It goes, baa. It is a sheep. Why did we go into that mine? Because we heard there'd been a murder. That's why. No, that's not my cow. Everyone knows that dwarfs gossip. It was stupid to tell them to keep it from us. That's the deep downers for you. They think they just have to say a thing, and it's true. Where's my cow? Water dripping on a stone. Is that my cow? Where did I see one of those thud boards recently? It goes, nay! Oh, yes, Helmklepper. He was very worried, wasn't he? It is a horse. He had a board. He said he was a keen player. No, that's not my cow. That was a dwarf under pressure, if I ever saw one. He looked as if he was dying to tell me something. Where's my cow? The look in his eyes. Is that my cow? I was so angry. Don't tell the watch. What did they expect? You'd have thought he would have known. It goes, whoo! He knew I'd go postal. It is a hippopotamus. He wanted me to be angry. No, that's not my cow. He damn well wanted me to be angry. Vim snorted and crowed his way through the rest of the zoo, missing out not one bark or squeak, and tucked up his son with a kiss. There was the sound of tinkling glass from downstairs. Oh, someone's dropped a glass, said his front brain. But his back brain, which had steered him safely through these mean streets for more than 50 years, whispered, like hell they did. Purity would be up in her room. Cook had the evening off. Sybil was out feeding the dragons. That left Wilkins. Butlers didn't drop things. From below, there was a quiet ugh, and then the thud of something hitting meat. And Vimes's sword was on the hook at the other end of the hall, because Sybil didn't like him wearing it in the house. As quietly as possible, he sought around for something, anything, that could be turned into a weapon. Regrettably, they had, when choosing toys for young Sam, completely neglected the whole area of hard things with sharp edges. Bunnies, chickies, and piggies there were in plenty. But, Vimes spotted something that would do, and wrenched it free. Moving soundlessly on thick, over-darned socks, he crept down the stairs. The door to the wine cellar was open. Vimes didn't drink these days, but guests did, and Wilkins, in accordance with some butlerian duty to generations only just or as yet unborn, cared for it, and bought the occasional promising vintage. Was there the crackle of glass being trodden on? Okay, did the stairs creak? He'd find out. He reached the vaulted, damp cellar and stepped carefully out of the light filtering down from the hall. Now he could smell it, the faint reek of black oil. The little bastards. And they could see in the dark, too, right? He reached into his pocket and fumbled for his matches, while his heart thudded in his ears. His fingers closed over a match. He took a deep breath. One hand grasped his wrist, and as he swung madly at the darkness with the hind leg of a rocking horse, this, too, was wrested from him. Instinctively, he kicked out, and there was a grunt. His arms were released from somewhere near the floor, the voice of Wilkins, rather strained, said, "Excuse me, sir, I appear to have walked into your foot." "Wilkins, what the hell's been happening? Some dwarfish gentleman called while you were upstairs, sir." And the butler, unfolding slowly. Through the cellar wall, in fact. I regret to say that I found it necessary to deal somewhat strictly with them. I fear one might be dead. Vimes peered around. Might be dead. Is he still breathing? I do not know, sir. Wilkins applied a match with great care to a stub of candle. I heard him gurgling, but he appears to have stopped. I'm sorry to say that they came upon me when I was leaving the ice store, and I was forced to defend myself with the first thing that came to hand, which was the ice knife, sir, said Wilkins levelly. He held up 18 inches of sharp, serrated steel, designed to slice ice into convenient blocks. The other gentleman I have lodged on a meat hook. Sir. You didn't, Bimes began, horrified. Only through his clothing, sir. I'm sorry to have laid hands on you, but I feared the wretched oil might have been inflammable. I hope I got all of them. I would like to take this opportunity to apologize for the mess. But Vimes was gone, and already halfway up the cellar steps. In the hall, his heart stopped. A short, dark figure was at the top of the stairs and disappearing into the nursery. The broad, stately staircase soared in front of him. A stairway to the top of the sky. He ran up it, hearing himself screaming, I'll kill you. The terrible fury choked him. The rage and dreadful fear set his lungs on fire, and still the stairs unrolled. There was no end to them. They climbed forever, while he was falling backwards into hell. But hell buoyed him up, gave wings to his rage, lifted him, sent him back, and then, his breath now nothing more than one long, profane scream, he reached the top step. The dwarf came out of the nursery doorway, backwards and fast. He hit the railings and crashed through them, onto the floor below. Vimes ran on, sliding on the polished wood, skidding as he swung into the nursery, dreading the sight of young Sam sleeping peacefully. On the wall, the little lamb rocked the night away. Sam Vimes picked up his son, wrapped in his blue blanket, and sagged to his knees. He hadn't drawn breath all the way up the stairs, and now his body cashed his checks, sucking in air and redemption in huge, racking sobs. Tears boiled out of him, shaking him wretchedly. Through the running, wet blur, he saw something on the floor. There, on the rug, was the rag ball, the hoop, and the woolly snake, lying where they'd fallen. The ball had rolled, more or less, into the middle of the hoop. The snake lay half uncoiled, its head resting on the edge of the circle. Together, in his weak nursery light, they looked at first glance like a big eye with a tail. Sir, is everything all right? Vimes looked up and focused on the red face of Wilkins, out of breath.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Fine. Thanks. He managed, summoning his scattered senses. Fine, Wilkins. Thank you. One must have got past me in the dark, huh? Yeah, very remiss of you, then, said Vimes, getting to his feet, but still clenching his son to him. I just bet most butlers around here would have taken out all three with one swipe of their polishing cloth, right? Are you all right, sir? But you went to the Shamlegger School of Butlering, Vimes giggled. His knees were trembling. Part of him knew what this was all about. After the terror came that drunken feeling when you were still alive and suddenly everything was funny. I mean, other butlers just know how to cut people dead with a look. But you, Wilkins, you know how to cut them dead with... Listen, sir. He's got outside, sir, said Wilkins urgently. So is Lady Sybil. Vimes's grin froze. Shall I take the young man, sir? Wilkins said, reaching. Vimes backed away. A troll with a crowbar and a tub of grease would not have wrested his son from him. No, but give me that knife, then go and make sure Purity is all right. Clutching young Sam to him, he ran back downstairs, across the hall, and out into the garden. It was stupid, stupid, stupid. He told himself that later. But right now, Sam Vimes was thinking only in primary colors. It had been hard, hard to get into the nursery in the face of the images that thronged his imagination. He was not going to go through that ever again. And the rage flowed back, easily, under control now. Smooth, like a river of fire. He'd find them all of them, and they would burn. The main dragon shed could only be reached now by dodging around three big cast-iron flame deflector shields, put in place 2 months ago. Dragon breeding was not a hobby for sissies or people who minded having to repaint the whole side of the house occasionally. There were big iron doors on either end. Vimes headed toward one not random, but ran into the dragon shed and bolted the door behind him. It was always warm in there, because the dragons burped all the time. It was that or explode, which occasionally did happen. And there was Sybil, in full dragon-keeping gear, walking calmly between the pens with a bucket in each hand, and behind her the doors at the other end were opening, and there was a short dark figure, and there was a rod with a little pilot flame on the end, and "Look out! Behind you!" Vimes yelled. His wife stared at him, turned around, dropped the bucket, and started to shout something. And then the flame blossomed. It hit Sybil in the chest, splashed across the pens, and went out abruptly. The dwarf looked down and began to thump the pipe desperately. The pillar of flame that was Lady Sybil said in an authoritative voice that broke no disobeying, "Lie down, Sam, right now." And Sybil dropped to the sandy floor as all down the lines of pens, dragons' heads rose on long dragon necks. Their nostrils were flaring. They were breathing in. They'd been challenged. They'd been offended. And they'd just had their supper. "Good boys," said Sybil from the floor. 26 streams of answering dragon fire rose to the occasion. Vimes, lying on the floor so that his body shielded young Sam, felt the hairs crisp on the back of his neck. This wasn't the smoky red of the dwarf fire. This was something only a dragon's stomach could cook up. The flames were practically invisible. At least one of them must have hit the dwarf's weapon, because there was an explosion and something went through the roof. The dragon pens were built like a fireworks factory. The walls were very thick, and the roof was as thin as possible, to provide a faster exit to heaven. When the noise had died to an excited hiccuping, Vimes risked looking up. Sybil was also getting to her feet, a little clumsily because of all the special clothing every dragon breeder wore. That is to say, every dragon breeder not currently occupying a small artistic urn. The iron of the far doors glowed around the black outline of a dwarf. A little way in front of them, two iron boots were cooling from white heat in a puddle of molten sand. Metal went plink. Lady Sybil reached up with heavy gloved hands, patted out some patches of burning oil on her leather apron, and lifted off her helmet. It landed on the sand with a thud. "Oh, Sam," she said softly. "Are you all right?" "Young Sam is fine." "We've got to get out of here." "Oh, Sam." "Sybil, I need you to take him," Vimes said, speaking slowly and clearly to get through the shock. "There could be others out there." Lady Sybil's eyes focused. "Give him to me," she ordered. "And you take Raja." Vimes looked where she was indicating. A young dragon with floppy ears and an expression of mildly concussed good humor blinked at him. He was a golden water, a breed with a flame so strong that one of them had once been used by thieves to melt their way into a bank vault. Vimes picked him up carefully and still winced. Ye gods, the ache in his hand had gone all the way to the elbow. Coal him up, Sybil commanded. Good old Sybil, he told himself as he fed anthracite into Raja's eager gullet. Her female forebears had valiantly backed up their husbands as distant embassies were besieged, and given birth on a camelback or in the shade of a stricken elephant, and handed around little gold-wrapped chocolates while trolls were trying to break into the compound, or had merely stayed at home and nursed such bits of husbands and sons that made it back from endless little wars. The result was a species of woman who, when duty called, turned into solid steel. Vimes flinched as Raja burped. "That was a dwarf, wasn't it?" said Sybil, cradling young Sam. "One of those deep-down ones you see about." "Yes. Why did it try to kill me?" "When people are trying to kill you, it means you're doing something right. It was a rule Sam had lived by. But this, even a real stone killer like Chrysoprase wouldn't have tried something like this. It was insane. They will burn. They will burn." "I think they're frightened of what I'm going to find out," said Vimes. "I think it's all gone wrong for them, and they want to stop me. Could they have been that stupid?" He wondered. "A dead wife, a dead child. Could they think that would mean for one moment that I'd stop? As it is, when I catch up with whoever ordered this, and I will, I hope there's something there to hold me back. They will burn for what they did." "Oh, Sam," murmured Sybil, the iron mast falling for a moment. "I'm sorry, I never expected this," said Vimes. He put the dragon down and held her carefully, almost fearfully. The rage had been so strong, he felt he might grow spikes or snap into shards. And the headache was coming back, like a lump of lead nailed just over his eyes. Whatever happened to all that, you know, hi-ho, hi-ho, and being kind to poor lost orphans in the forest, so... Sybil whispered. Wilkins is in the house, he said. Purity is as well. Let's go and find them, then, said Sybil. She grinned, a little damply. I wish you wouldn't bring your work home with you, Sam. This time it followed me, said Vimes grimly. But I intend to tidy it up, believe me. They shall burn... No. They shall be hunted down to any hole they hide in and brought back to face justice, unless, oh please, they resist arrest. Purity was standing in the hall, alongside Wilkins. She was holding a trophy Clachian sword without much conviction. The butler had augmented his weaponry with a couple of meat cleavers, which he hefted with a certain worrying expertise. My gods, man, you're covered in blood, Sybil burst out. Yes, your ladyship, said Wilkins smoothly. May I say in mitigation that it is not, in fact, mine? There was a dwarf in the dragon house, said Vimes. Any sign of any others? No, sir. The ones in the cellar had an apparatus for projecting fire, sir. The dwarf we saw had one, too, said Vimes, adding. It didn't do him any good. Indeed, sir? I apprised myself of its use, sir, and tested my understanding by firing it down the tunnel they had arrived by until it ran out of igniferous juice. Sir, just in case there were more. It is for this reason, I suspect, that the shrubbery at number 5 is on fire. Vimes hadn't met Wilkins when they were both young. The Cockpill Street Roaring Lads had a treaty with Shamlegger Street, thus allowing them to ignore that flank while they concentrated on stopping the territorial aggression of the Pigsty Hill Dead Marmoset gang. He was glad he hadn't fetched up against young Wilkins. They must have come up for air there, he said. The Jeffersons are on holiday. Well, if they're not ready for that sort of thing, they shouldn't be growing rhododendrons, said Sybil matter-of-factly. What now, Sam? We're staying the night at Pseudopolis Yard, said Vimes. Don't argue. Ramkins have never run away from anything, Sybil declared. Vimeses have run like hell all the time, said Vimes, too diplomatic to mention that the aforesaid ancestors who came home in pieces. That means you fight where you want to fight. We're all going to go and get the coach, and we're all going down to the yard, when we're there, I'll send people back to pick up our stuff. Just for one night, all right? What would you like me to do with the visitors, sir? Said Wilkins, with a sidelong glance at Lady Sybil. One is indeed dead, I am afraid. If you recall, I must have stabbed him with the ice knife I happened to be innocently holding, having been cutting ice for the kitchen, he added, poker-faced. Put him on the roof of the coach, said Vimes. The other one also appears to be dead, sir. I'd swear he was fine when I tied him up, sir, because he was cursing me in their lingo. You didn't tie him up too hard, did Vimes began, and gave up on it. Wilkins wanted someone dead. He wouldn't have taken a prisoner. It must have been a surprise, breaking into a cellar and meeting something like Wilkins. Anyway, to hell with them. Just died, he said? Yes, sir. Do dwarfs naturally celebrate green? What? There is green around his mouth, sir. Could be a clue, in my opinion. All right. Put him on the roof of the coach, too. Let's go, shall we? Vimes had to insist that Sybil traveled on the inside. Usually she got her own way, and he was happy to give it to her. But the unspoken agreement was that when he really insisted, she listened. It's a married couple thing. Vimes rode beside Wilkins and got him to stop halfway down the hill where a man was selling the evening edition of the Times, still damp from the press. The picture on the front was of a mob of dwarfs. They were pulling open one of the mine's big, round metal doors. It was hanging off its hinges. In the middle of the group, hands gripping the edge of the frame and muscles bulging, was Captain Carrot, gleaming with his shirt off. Vimes grunted happily, folding up the paper and lit a cheroot. The shaking in his legs was barely noticeable now. The fires of that terrible rage banked but still glowing. A free press, Wilkins. You just can't beat it, he said. I've often heard you remark as much, sir, said Wilkins. The entity slithered through the rainy streets, confounded again. It was getting through. It knew it. It was being heard. And yet every time it tried to follow the words, it was thrown back. Bars had blocked its way. Doors that had been open locked themselves as it approached. And what was this? Some kind of low-class soldier? By now it would have had berserkers biting their shields in half. That was not the main problem, though. It was being watched, and that had never happened before. There was a crowd of dwarfs milling around outside the yard. They did not look belligerent. That is to say, any more than a species the members of which by custom and practice wear a big heavy helmet, mail, iron boots, and carry an axe all the time can fail to look belligerent. But they did look lost and bewildered, and unsure why they were there. Vimes got Wilkins to drive in through the coach arch and take the bodies of the attackers down to Igor, who knew about things like people dying with great green mouths. Sybil, Purity, and young Sam were hustled away to a clean office. Interesting, though, Vimes thought as he watched Cherry and a group of dwarf officers fuss over the child. Even now, in fact, especially now, given the way the tension had made everyone revert to old certainties, he wasn't sure how many female dwarf officers he had. It was a brave female dwarf who advertised the fact, in a society where the wearing of even a decent floor-length leather and chainmail dress instead of leggings positioned you on the moral map at the far side of Tawny and her hard-working co-workers at the Pussycat Club. But introduce a gurgling kid into the room, and you could spot them instantly. For all their fearsome clang and beards, you could lose a rat in. Carrot pushed his way through the crowd and saluted. A lot's been happening, sir. My word, hasn't it, said Vimes, with manic brightness. Yes, sir. Everyone was pretty angry when we brought the dead dwarfs up. And what with one thing and another, opening the big door in Treacle Street was pretty popular. All the deep downers have gone, except one. That'd be Helm Clover, said Vimes, heading for his office. Carrot looked surprised. That's right, sir. He's in a cell. I'd like you to have a look at him, if you don't mind. He was crying and moaning and trembling in a corner, with lit candles all around him. More candles, afraid of the dark, Vimes suggested. Could be, sir. Igor says the trouble's in his head. Don't let Igor try to give him a new one, said Vimes quickly. I'll go down there as soon as I can. I've tried talking to him, but he just looks blank, sir. How did you know he was the one we found? I've got some edges and some bits that are an interesting shape, said Vimes, sitting down at his desk. When Carrot looked blank, he went on. Of the jigsaw puzzle, Captain. But there are lots of bits of sky. However, I think I might be nearly there, because I think I've been handed a corner. What talks underground, sir? You know, the dwarfs were listening for something underground. You wondered if someone was trapped, right? But is there, I don't know, something dwarf-made that talks? Garrett's brow wrinkled. You're not talking about a cube, are you, sir? I don't know, am I? You tell me. The deep downers have some in their mind, sir, but I'm sure there's none buried here. They're generally found in hard rocks. Anyway, you wouldn't listen for one. I've never heard of them talking when they are found. Some dwarfs have spent years learning how to use just one of them. Good. Now, what is a cube? Said Vimes, glancing at his entry. Oh, good. There weren't any memos from A.E. Pessimal. It's like a book, sir, which talks. A bit like your gooseberry, I suppose. Most of them contain interpretations of dwarf lore by ancient lawmasters. It's very old magic, I suppose. Suppose? Well, technomantic devices look like things that are built, you know, out of Captain, you've lost me again. What are devices, and why do you pronounce the capital D? Cubes are types of device, are a type of device, sir. No one knows who made them, or for what original purpose. They might be older than the world. They've been found in volcanoes and deepest rocks. The deep downers have most of them. They come in all sorts of... Hold on. You mean that when you're dug up, they're dug up, there's dwarf voices from millions of years ago? Surely dwarfs haven't been... No, sir. Dwarfs put them on later. I'm not too well up on this. I think when they're first found, they mostly have natural noises, like moving water or birdsong, or rocks moving, that sort of thing. The Grags found out how to get rid of those to make room for words, I think. I did hear about one that was the sound of a forest. 10 million years of sounds, and a cube less than 2 inches across. And they're valuable, these things. Unbelievably valuable. Especially the cubes. Worth mining through a mountain of granite, as we say. Worth mining through a mountain of granite, as we say. That's a dwarf we, not a copper we, sir. So, digging through a few thousands of tons of Ankh-Morpork muck will be worth it, then. For a cube? Yes. Is that what all this is about? But how would it get here? The average dwarf might never see one in his whole life. Only Grags and great chieftains use them. And why would it be talking? All dwarf ones can only be brought to life by a keyword. Search me. What do they look like? Apart from being cubical, I assume. I've only ever seen a few, sir. They're, up to 6 inches on a side. Look like a bronze, and they glitter. Green and blue, said Vime sharply. Yes, sir. They had a few in the mine in Treacle Street. I think I saw them, said Vimes. And I think they've got one more. Voices from the past, eh? How come I've never heard of them before? Carrot hesitated. You're a very busy man, sir. You can't know everything. Vimes detected just a subcon of a smidgen of a reproach, sir. There. Are you saying I'm a man of narrow horizons, Captain? Oh, no, sir. You're interested in every aspect of police work and criminology. Sometimes it was impossible to read Captain Carrot's face. Vimes didn't bother to try. I'm missing something, he said. But this is about Coombe Valley. I know it. Look, what is the secret of Coombe Valley? I don't know, sir. I don't think there is one. I suppose the big secret would be which side attacked first. You know, sir, both sides say they were ambushed by the other side. Does that sound very interesting to you? Said Vimes. Would it matter much now? Who started it all? I should say so, sir, said Carrot. But I thought they'd been scrapping since time began. Yes, but Coombe Valley was the first official one, sir. Who won? Said Vimes, sir. It's not a difficult question, is it? Who won the first battle of Coombe Valley? I suppose you could say it was rained off, sir, said Carrot. They stopped a grudge march like that because of a bit of rain? For a lot of rain, sir. A thunderstorm just sat there in the mountains above it. There were flash floods full of boulders. The fighters were knocked off their feet and washed away. Some were struck by lightning. It quite ruined the whole day, said Vimes. All right, Captain. Do we have any idea where the bastards have gone? They have an escape tunnel. I bet they did. And collapsed it after them. I've got men digging. Sand them down. They could be in a safe house. They could have got out in a cart. Hell, they could all be wearing helmets and chainmail and passing for city dwarfs. Enough of that. We've been running people ragged. Let them go for now. I think we'll be able to find them again. Yes, sir. The Grags left so fast, sir, that they left some other devices. I have secured them for the city. They must have been very frightened. They just took the cubes and ran. Are you all right, sir? You look a bit flustered. Actually, Captain, I feel inexplicably cheerful. Would you like to hear how my day went? The showers in the wash house were the talk of the city. Vimes had paid for them himself, after Veterinary made an acidic comment about the cost. They were a bit primitive, and were really no more than watering can heads connected to a couple of water tanks on the next floor. But after a night in Ankh-Morpork's underworld, the thought of being really clean was very attractive. Even so, Angua hesitated. "This is wonderful," said Sally, turning gently under a spray. "What's wrong?" "Look, I'm just dealing with it, all right?" snapped Angua, standing just beyond the spray. "It's a full moon, okay? The wolf is a bit strong." Sally stopped scribbling. "Oh, I see," she said. "It's the whole B-A-T-H thing." "You just had to say that, didn't you?" said Angua, and forced herself to step onto the tiles. "Well, what do you do normally?" said Sally, handling her the soap. "Cold water and pretend it's rain. Don't you dare laugh. Change of subject right now." "All right. What did you think of Nobby's girlfriend?" said Sally. "Tawny? Friendly. Good looking. Chai perfect physical beauty. Astonishing proportions. A walking classic." "Well, yes, pretty much," Angua conceded. "And all that is Nobby Nobbs' girlfriend?" "She seems to think so." "You're not telling me she deserves Nobby," said Sally. "Look, Verity Pushpram doesn't deserve Nobby, and she's got a weird squint, arms like a stevedore, and cooks shellfish for a living," said Angua. "That's how things are." "Is she his old girlfriend?" "He used to say so, as far as I know. The physical side of the relationship consisted of her hitting him with a wet fish whenever he went near her." Angua squeezed the last of the slime out of her hair. It was tough stuff to lose. As it was, some of it was fighting not to go down the plug hole. That was enough. She didn't like to spend too much time in the shower. Another 6 or so sessions, and the smell would have quite gone away. The important thing now was to remember to use a towel and not to shake herself dry. "You think I went down there to impress Captain Carrot, don't you?" said Sally, behind her. Angua stopped, her head wrapped in a towel, and toweling. "Oh, well, it was going to happen sooner or later." "No," she said. "Your heartbeat says otherwise," Sally said meekly. "Don't worry, I wouldn't have a chance. His heart beats faster every time he looks at you, and yours skips a beat every time you see him." "Okay, then this is it," said the wolf, who was never far away. "This is where we sort it out. Clog and Sphinx." "No, don't listen to the wolf." "But it would help, wouldn't it, if this stupid bitch stopped listening to the bat?" "Stay out of people's hearts," she growled. "I can't. You can't switch off your nose, can you?" "Can you?" The moment of the wolf had passed. Angle relaxed a little. "His heart beat faster, did it?" "No," she said. "I can't." "Has he ever seen you without your uniform?" "Ye gods," thought Angua, and headed for her clothes. "Well, of course," she mumbled. "I meant wearing something else, like a dress," Sally went on. "Come on. Every copper spends some time out of uniform. That's how you know they're off duty. You're off duty." "But it's pretty much a 24/8 job for us," said Angua. "There's always..." "You mean it is for him, because he likes it that way. And so you go along with it," said the vampire. And that one got through all Angua's defenses. "It's my life. Why should I listen to advice from a vampire?" "Because you're a werewolf," said Sally. "Only a vampire would dare to give it, right? You don't have to be at his heel all the time. Look, I've been through all this, understand? It's a werewolf thing. We are what we are. I'm not. You don't get the black ribbon just for signing the pledge, you know. And it doesn't mean you stop craving blood. You just don't do anything about it. At least you can go out at night and chase chickens." There was a stony silence. Then Angua said, "You know about the chickens?" "Yes, I pay for them, you know." "I'm sure you do. And it's not as though it's every night." "I'm sure it isn't. Look, do you know there are people out there who will volunteer to be vampire's dinner companion, providing it's all done with style? And we are considered weird," she sniffed. "By the way, what did you wash your hair in?" "Willow Brothers Good Girl Flea Shampoo," said Angua. "It brings out the gloss," she added defensively. "Look, I want to get this clear, right? Just because we spent hours wading through under the city, and okay, maybe saved each other's lives once or twice, it does not mean we're friends, okay? We just happen to be there at the same time." "You do need some time off," said Sally. "I was going to buy a drink for Tawny anyway, to say thanks. And Sherry wants to tag along. How about it? We've been stood down for now. Time out for a little fun?" Angua struggled with a seething snake's nest of emotions. Tawny had been very kind, and far more helpful than you might expect from someone wearing 6 inches of heel and 4 square inches of clothing. "Come on," said Sally encouragingly. "I don't know about you, but it's going to take a bit of effort to get the taste of that mud out of my mouth. Oh, all right. But this doesn't mean we're bonding. Fine, fine. I'm not a bondage kind of person, Angua added. Yes, yes, said Sally. I can see that. Vimes sat and stared at the notebook. He'd got talking cube written down, encircled. Out of the corner of his ear, he could hear the sound of the city watch rising from below, the bustle in the yard of the old lemonade factory, where the specials were assembling again. Just in case, the rattle of the hurry-up wagon, the general murmur of voices coming up through the floor. After some thinking, he wrote Old Well and circled that, too. He'd scrumped plums in the gardens of Empirical Crescent with all the other kids. Half the houses were empty, and no one cared much. Yes, there had been a well, but it had long been full up to the top with garbage. Even then, grass was growing on the top. They only found the bricks because they looked for them. So let's say that anything buried right at the bottom, where the dwarfs had headed, had been dumped, more than 50, 60 years ago. He seldom saw a dwarf in Ankh-Morpork pork, even 40 years ago. And they weren't anything like rich or powerful enough to own a cube. They were hard workers, seeking, just possibly, a better life. So what human would throw away a talking box worth a mountain of gold? You'd have to be bloody mad. Vimes sat rigidly, staring at the scrawls on the page. In the distance, detritus was barking a command at someone. He felt like a man crossing a river on stepping stones. He was nearly halfway across, but the next stone was just a bit too far and could only be reached with serious groinal stress. Nevertheless, his foot was waving in the air, and it was that or soaking. He wrote rascal. Then he circled the word several times, the pencil biting into the cheap paper. Rascal must have been in Tecum Valley. Let's say he found a cube there. And who knows how. Just lying there. Anyway, he brings it home. He paints his picture and goes mad, but somewhere along, the cube started talking to him. Vimes wrote special word. He drew a circle around it so hard that his pencil broke. Maybe he can't find the word for stop talking. Anyway, he chucks it down a well. He tried to write, did Rascal ever live in Empirical Crescent? And then gave up and tried to remember it. Anyway, then he dies, and afterwards, his damn book is written. This damn book is written. It doesn't sell many copies, but recently it's republished, and but now there's lots of dwarfs in the city. Some of them read it, and something tells them that the secret is in this cube. They want to find out where it is. How? Damn. Doesn't the book say the secret of Kung Valley is in the painting? Okay. Maybe he somehow painted some kind of code into the painting to say where the cube was. But so what? What was so bad to hear that you killed the poor devils who heard it? I think I'm looking at this wrong. It's not my cow. It's a sheep with a pitchfork. Unfortunately, it goes quack. He was getting lost now, going all over the place. He got a toe on the opposite stone, and he felt he made some progress. But to what, exactly? I mean, what would really happen if there was a real proof that, say, the dwarfs ambushed the trolls? Nothing that isn't happening already, that's what. You can always find an excuse that your side will accept. And who cares what the enemy thinks. In the real world, it wouldn't make any difference. There was a very faint knock at the door, the sort that you use if you secretly hope it won't be answered. Vimes sprang from his chair and pulled it open. A. Pesmol stood there. Ah, A.E., said Vimes, going back to his desk and laying down his pencil. Come on in.
What can I do for you? How's the arm? Could you spare a moment of your time, Your Grace?
Your Grace, thought Vimes. Well, he hadn't the heart to object this time. He sat down again. A. Pesmol was still wearing the chainmail shirt with the specials badge on it. He didn't look very shiny. Brick's swipe had bowled him across the plaza like a ball. A. Pesmol began. You have to start as a lance constable, but a man of your talents ought to make it to sergeant within a year. And you can have your own office, said Vimes. A. Pesmol shut his eyes. How did you know? He breathed. You tacked a boozed-up troll with your teeth, said Vimes. There's a man born for the badge, I thought to myself. And that's what you've always wanted, right? But you were always too small, too weak, too shy to be a watchman. I can buy big and strong anywhere. Right now, I need a man who knows how to hold a pencil without breaking it. You'll be my adjutant, he went on. You'll handle all my paperwork. You'll read the reports. You'll try to figure out what's important. And so you can learn what is important. You'll have to do at least 2 patrols a week. A tear was running down A.E. Pessimal's cheek. Thank you, Your Grace, he said hoarsely. If A.E. Pessimal had enough tests to stick out, it would be sticking. Of course, you'll need to finish your report on the watch first, Vimes added. That is a matter between you and his lordship. And now, if you'll excuse me, I really must get on. I look forward to seeing you working for me, Lance Constable Pessimal. Thank you, Your Grace. Oh, and you won't call me Your Grace, said Vimes. He thought for a moment and decided that the man had earned this, all in one go, and added, Mr. Vimes will do. And so we make progress, he said to himself. After A. Pessimal had floated away, and his lordship won't like it. So, as far as I can see, there's no downside. Quis custodia ipsis custodis, qui custodis custodiant? Was that right for who watches the watcher that watches the watchman? Probably not. Still, your move, my lord. He was just puzzling over his notebook again, when the door opened without an introductory knock. Sybil entered, with a plate. You're not eating enough, Sam, she announced, and the canteen here is a disgrace. It's all grease and garbage. That's what the men like, I'm afraid, said Vimes guiltily. I've cleaned out the tar in the tea urn, at least, Sybil went on, with satisfaction. You cleaned out the tea urn? Said Vimes in a hollow voice. It was like being told that someone had wiped the patina off a fine old work of art. Yes. It was like tar in there. There really wasn't much proper food in the store, but I managed to make you a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. Thank you, dear. Vimes cautiously lifted a corner of the bread with his broken pencil. There seemed to be too much lettuce, which was to say there was some lettuce. There's a lot of dwarfs come to see you, Sam, said Sybil, as if this was preying on her mind. Vimes stood up so fast that his chair fell over. Is young Sam all right? He said. Yes, Sam. They're city dwarfs. You know them all, I think. They say they want to talk to you about... Vimes was already clattering down the stairs, drawing his sword as he did so. The dwarfs were clustered nervously by the duty sergeant's desk. They had that opulence of metalwork, sleekness of beard, and thickness of girth that marked them out as dwarfs who were doing very well for themselves, or who have been right up until now. Vimes appeared in front of them like a whirlwind of wrath. You scum! You rat-sucking little worm-eaters! You heads-down little scurriers in the dark! What did you bring to my city? What were you thinking? Did you want the deep-downers here? Did you dare deplore what Hamcrusher said? All that bile and ancient lies? Or did you say, well, I don't agree with him, of course, but he's got a point. Did you say, oh, he goes too far, but it's about time somebody said it. And now have you come here to wring your hands and say how dreadful it was nothing to do with you? Who were the dwarfs and the mobs, then? Aren't you community leaders? Were you leading them? And why are you here now, you ugly, sniveling grubbers? Is it possible that now, after that bastard's bodyguards tried to kill my family, you're here to complain? Have I broken some code, trodden on some ancient toe? To hell with it. To hell with you. He could feel the words straining, fighting to get out, and the effort of restraining them filled his stomach with acid and made his temples throb. Just one whine, he thought.
Just one pompous moan. Go on.
Well? He demanded, rubbing his aching hand. The dwarfs have perceptibly moved backwards. Vimes wondered if they'd read his thoughts. They'd echoed in his brain loudly enough. A dwarf cleared his throat. Commander Vimes, he began. You're poor, strong in the arm, aren't you? Vimes demanded. One half of burly and strong in the arm? You make crossbows. Yes, Commander. And remove your weapons. All of them. All of you, Vimes snapped. The room fell silent. Out of the corner of his eye, Vimes saw a couple of dwarf officers, who had at least been pretending to be engaged in paperwork, rising from their seats. He was being dangerously stupid. Part of him knew. But right now, he wanted to hurt a dwarf, and he wasn't allowed to do it with steel. Most of the battle stuff they wore was simply for clang in any case, but a dwarf would sooner drop his drawers than put aside his axe. And these were serious city dwarfs, with seats in the guilds and everything. He was going too far. He managed to grunt, "Alright, keep your battle axes. Leave everything else at the desk. You'll get a receipt." For a moment, quite a long moment, he thought, no, he hoped they would refuse. But one of them, somewhere in the group, said, "I think we must do this for the commander. These are difficult times. We must learn to fit them." Viamus went up to his office, hearing the clinks and clangs behind him, and landed so violently in his chair that this time a wheel snapped off. The receipt was a nasty touch. He was quite pleased with it. On his desk, on a little stand that Sybil had made for it, it was his official baton of office. It was, in fact, the same size as the ordinary copper truncheon, but turned out of rosewood and silver instead of lignum vitae or oak. It still had plenty of weight, though. Certainly enough to leave the words "Protector of the King's Peace" printed back to front on a dwarf's skull. The dwarfs were ushered in, looking slightly less heavy. "Just one word," Vimes thought, as the acid swirled. "One damn word. Go on. Just breathe wrong." "Very well. What can I do for you?" he said. "I'm not sure you know all of us. Pors began, trying to smile. "Probably. The dwarf next to you is Grabpot Thundergust, who has just launched the new Lady's Secrets range of perfumes and cosmetics. My wife uses your stuff all the time. Thundergust, in traditional chainmail, a three-horned helmet, and with an enormous axe strapped across his back," gave Vimes an embarrassed nod. Vimes's gaze moved on. "And you are Setha Ironcrest, proprietor of the chain of bakeries of the same name. And you are surely Gimlet Gimlet, owner of two famous dwarf delicatessens and the newly opened Yo Rat in Attic Bistry." Vimes looked around the office, dwarf after dwarf, until he got back to the front row, and a dwarf of fairly modest dress by dwarf standards, who had been watching him intently. Vimes had a good memory for faces, and had seen this one recently, but couldn't place it. Perhaps it had been behind a well-flung half-brick. "You, I don't think I know," he said. "Oh, we haven't exactly been introduced, Commander," said the dwarf cheerfully, "but I'm very interested in the theory of games, or Mr. Shine's Thud Academy," Vimes thought. The dwarf's voice sounded like the one that had, he'd admit it, been of diplomatic help downstairs. He wore a simple, plain round helmet, a plain leather shirt with some basic mail on it, and his beard was clipped to something tidier than the general dwarfish gorse bush effect. Compared to the other dwarfs, this one looked streamlined. Vimes couldn't even see an axe. "Indeed," he said. "Well, in fact, I don't play him. So what's your name?" "Bashful Bashfulson, Commander. Grag Bashfulson." Quietly, Vimes picked up his truncheon and rolled it in his fingers. "Not underground, then," he said. "Some of us move on, sir. Some of us think that darkness isn't a depth, it's a state of mind." "That's nice of you," said Vimes. "Oh, friendly and forward-looking, are we now? Where were you yesterday? But now I've got all the aces. Those bastards murdered 4 city dwarfs. They broke into my house, tried to kill my wife, and now they've had it away on their toes. Wherever they've gone, they're coming up. He put the truncheon back on its stand. "As I said, what can I do for you, gentlemen?" He got the sense that they were all turning, physically or mentally, to Bashfulson. "I see," he thought. "It seems that what we have here is a dozen monkeys and one organ grinder, eh?" "How can we help you, Commander?" said the Grag. Vimes stared. "You could have stopped them. That's how you could have helped. Don't give me those somber faces. Maybe you didn't say yes, but you sure as hell didn't say no loud enough." I owe you not one damned thing. Don't come to me for your bloody absolution. Right now, by going out into the street, walking up to the biggest troll you can see, and shaking him warmly by the hand, maybe," said Vimes. "Or going out into the street. Quite frankly, I'm busy, gentlemen, and the middle of a horse race is not the time to be mending fences. They'll be heading for the mountains, said Bashful Sim. They'll steer clear of Ubervald and Lankra. They won't be sure of meeting friends there. That means going into the mountains via Yamados. Lots of caves there. Vimes shrugged. We can see you're annoyed, Mr. Vimes said, strong in the arm, but we... I've got two dead assassins in the morgue, said Vimes. One of them died of poison. What do you think about that? And I'm Commander Vimes, thank you. It's said that they take a slow poison before they go on an important mission, said Bashful Sim. No turning back, eh? Said Vimes. Well, that's interesting. But it's the living that concern me right now. He stood up. I have to go and see a dwarf in the cells who does not want to talk to me. Ah, yes, that would be Helmclover, said Bashful Sim. He was born here, Commander, but went off to study the mountains more than 3 months ago. Against his parents' wishes. I'm sure he never intended anything like this. He was trying to find himself. Well, he can start looking at my cells, said Vimes crisply. May I be there when you question him? Said the Grog. Why? Well, for one thing, it may prevent rumors that he was mistreated. Or start them, said Vimes. Who watches the watchmen? He asked himself. Me. Bashful Sim gave him a cool look. It could calm the situation, sir. I don't habitually beat up prisoners, if that's what you're suggesting, said Vimes. And I am sure you would not wish to do so tonight. Vimes opened his mouth to shout the Grog out of the building and stopped. Because the cheeky little sod had got it right. Slap bang on the money. Vimes had been on the edge since leaving the house. He felt a tingling across his skin, and a tightness in his gut, and a sharp, nasty little headache. Someone was going to pay for all this, and it didn't need to be a screwed-up bit player like Helmclover. And he was not certain at all, what he'd do if the prisoner gave him any lip, or tried to be smart. Beating people up in little rooms, he knew where that led. And if you did it for a good reason, you'd do it for a bad one. You couldn't say we're the good guys and do bad guy things. Sometimes the watching watchman inside every good copper's head could use an extra pair of eyes. Justice had to be seen to be done, and so he'd see it done up good and proper. Gentlemen, he said, keeping his eye on the Grog, but talking to the room at large. I know all of you. You all know me. You're all respected dwarfs with a stake in this city. I want you to vouch for Mr. Bashful Sim, because I've never met him before in my life. Come on, Gimlet. I've known you for years. What do you say? They killed my son, said Ironcrust. A knife dropped into Vimes' head. It slipped down his windpipe, sliced his heart, cut through his stomach, and disappeared. Where the rage had been, there was a chill. I'm sorry, Commander, said Bashful Sim quietly. It's true. I don't think Gunder Ironcrust was interested in the politics, you understand. He just took a job at the mine because he wanted to feel like a real dwarf and work with a shovel for a few days. They left him in the mud, said Ironcrust, in a voice that was eerily without emotion. Any help you need, we will give. Any help. But when you find them, kill them all. Vimes could think of nothing more to say than, I will catch them. He didn't say, kill them. No, not if they surrender. Not if they don't come at me armed. I know where that leads. Then we'll leave and let you get about your business, said Strongly Arm. Grog Bashful Sim is known to us, indeed. A little modern, perhaps. A little young. Not the kind of Grog we grew up with, but yes, we'd vouch for him. Good night, Commander. Vimes stared at his desk as they filed out. When he looked up, the Grog was still there with a patient little smile. You don't like a Grog. You don't look like a Grog. You look like just another dwarf, said Vimes. Why haven't I heard of you? Because you are a policeman, perhaps, said Bashful Sim meekly. Okay, I take the point. But you're not a deep downer? Bashful Sim shrugged. I can think deep thoughts. I was born here, Commander, just like Helmclover. I don't believe I need a mountain over my head in order to be a dwarf. Vimes nodded. A local lad, not some mountain graybeard. Got a quick brain, too. No wonder the leaders like him. All right, Mr. Bashfulson. You can tag along, he said. But it's on two conditions, okay? Condition one. You've got 5 minutes to lay your hands on a thud set. I think you can do that. I think I can, too, said the dwarf, smiling faintly. And the other condition? How long will it take you to teach me to play, said Vimes. You've never played it at all? No, a certain troll showed me the game a little while ago. But I've never played games since I grew up. I used to be good at tiddly rats. A famous Ankh-Morpork gutter sport, second only to dead rat conquers. Turd races in the gutters, gutter appear to have died out, despite an attempt to take them up market with the name Poostix. When I was a nipper, though. Well, a few hours should be, Bashfulson began. We don't have time, said Vimes. You've got 10 minutes.